And today, this morning, we have the DDG for IT, Mr. Silo Makau. He's with some members of the support. He will be introducing the major. We know he's always here with us. And Mr. Majid is always here with us, also from the DM's office. And the DDG will introduce the other people that have joined. Honorable members, as we have said, today we'll be discussing the IT project. We read about the hackers who are gaining access to our systems or different systems of government, and we seem not to be secured with our IT. But that we will leave to the DDG to take us through as to what they are doing with regard to the IT, streamlining of the systems within the department. We always complain that systems don't talk to one another. If there's anything that they are doing with regard to systems that talk to one another, because we have problems of people abusing the system because our systems are not linked to one another. So on that note, I will hand over to DDG, Mr. Lomakao, to first make the introduction and then take us through the presentation. Mr. Makao.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning to the Honorable Members. The Honorable Chairperson has introduced Major Kovese from the DG's office, Majid from the DM's office, and we've got also Mapuko Letswalo from the Intergovernmental Relations. My name is Lomakao, DDG for IT. Thank you for the opportunity. The presentation is about the IT plan and the budget going forward in terms of the systems and the projects that we are planning to implement in the Department of Home Affairs. But firstly, I would like to apologize for the Director General. They started the FOSAT meeting yesterday and he could not get out of that meeting today. And also for the CFO, he's busy with finalizing audit report in preparation for submission to the Auditor General and the National Treasury. So our sincere apologies on behalf of the DG and the CFO. If I start with the presentation, the content of the presentation is as follows. We thought it's important and critical that we give you a background in terms of the initial plan of the DHA systems in Home Affairs. Know about the Who Am I Online as one of the main system or program in Home Affairs, and also the key benefits of the Who Am I Online, and now the IT plan going forward, and that is what we call the DHA system modernization, and what is the way forward in terms of those plans. If you remember, the background in terms of Who Am I Online is that department was envisaging changing the manual processes where paper forms are used as a main interface with the client systems to a total paperless environment where all the transactions are committed online and on real time. The WIO project was to supply a turnkey solution for the integrated core systems based on the general life capture concept. The turnkey solution simply means that the development of the system and the infrastructure and the software was totally outsourced to a supplier, and therefore Home Affairs was to provide the monitoring evaluation in terms of this. So the supplier was to come and provide a total solution to Home Affairs. In some instances, you'll find that the department will provide the hardware of the computers and the supplier will provide the software. But in this case, the total solution was outsourced to the supplier. The proposed design of the system consisted of integrated core business applications, a set of integrated service client console for the DHA front office locally and internationally. The biggest challenge in home affairs has always been that the systems are not integrated. The systems are not communicating to each other, as the chairperson has alluded earlier on. In other words, when a transaction is performed within the National Population Register, that transaction is not immediately talking to the asylum seeker management system or the Home Affairs Automated Fingerprint Identification System, what we call HADIS. Therefore, that caused a problem because you might have a situation whereby, due to some collaboration of, you know, corrupt officials, the transaction that is performed in one system is not updated in another system because that is not automated. Now, we want to get rid of that situation to make sure that if somebody is performing a transaction in a National Population Register, that transaction is immediately updated within other systems so that we have, you know, an integrated kind of information which is performed from all different systems. The system was to provide solution for both immigration and civic services by integrating the National Population Register, which is the one for the where we produce IDs, the National Immigration Information System. This is the system that you find in the Asylum Seeker Management for Refugee and Deportation. And of course, the last one, which was the Movement Control System, where we control the movement of people in and out of the country. Currently, these systems are not communicating to each other, and therefore it's very important that if somebody is crossing the border, we must be able to see it from the remote site, and we shouldn't really have to go to that border and make sure that we see the information. But furthermore, the Home Affairs National Identification System, the HANIS, the one that stores the fingerprint and the Integrated Electronic Document Management System, we also were to interface into this new project, because as we are saying, the main thing is the integration of these core systems. Because by that time, during the time that the WIO concept was designed, they felt that HANIS was still having a good technology, but also there was a separate tender for EDMS, and therefore it was not part of WIO. The only thing that they were going to do was to actually interface the WIO systems with the HANIS and EDMS. Look at slide number 5. The key benefits for this program was to make sure that we eliminate manual and tedious processes, and to make sure that we have, you know, all the transaction electronically, to reduce the vast amount of paper. We've got buildings that are full of documents in Home Affairs which you want to translate into, you know, electronic documents through the Electronic Document Management System program that I've spoken about. You will see in the next page the type of projects we are talking about. We'll speak to this. To ensure acceptable fingerprints quality at the Office of Application, all our systems, as the rule now going forward in Home Affairs, is to make sure that they've got biometrics. And when we were doing the research, the most important thing that we felt is will help us to reduce corruption and other things is the fingerprint biometric. And we'll talk about it later. To improve the turnaround time for enabling document application, we are saying that. We are saying that we also want to improve the turnaround time for enabling document application. You will notice that in terms of the passport system in the 40 offices where we have implemented live capture, our turnaround time in terms of the passport has actually improved drastically. And this is simply because of the technology like live capture, which we also want to implement for the IDs. And I'll talk about it later on in the next slide. To eradicate future back record conversion, this is where we want to translate or convert the manual document into electronic format. to improve the overall security. This is critical for Home Affairs as well, because we are orientating ourselves towards being a security department, and therefore technology is central to that in terms of getting to that objective. To improve agility through the use of workflow and compliance to service-oriented architecture, this is the latest framework in terms of designing the technology. We want to make sure that Home Affairs is using the best practices in terms of designing the system through what we call the service-oriented architecture. To improve integrity through enforcement of business rules, we also believe that it's very important that when you design the system, you look at the processes, people, and technology. If you miss one of those, you will not be able to implement the solution that will give the maximum benefits of the organization. And of course, the last thing was to introduce the general life capture concept with high configurable counters housing integrated client service console, which are backed by fault tolerance controllers for online processing. What we also envisage is that most of our offices, including in the rural areas, have got challenges in terms of infrastructure from the power supply and so forth. So the idea here was to introduce a sort of a box which will comprise of a computer, the scanner, the printer, but also a fault tolerant whereby if the power goes off, the users must be able to continue processing application on an offline basis, because that box will actually be provided with an interim power supply while you are restoring the bigger one. So that is what you call the uninterrupted power supply. The next slide is what Home Affairs want to do going forward, which is, we call it the DHA System Modernization Program. This is everything that has to do with DHA in terms of IT systems. We say that we want to implement the National Identification System with inherent biometric security features. I've emphasized earlier on that critical to our system is biometrics. When you talk about biometrics, you can talk about the iris, which has to do with the eyes, or the fingerprints biometrics. But I think the maturity level in terms of the fingerprint is so good that most of the organization and all those matured organizations are actually using the fingerprint as a biometric. And we also have reaped the benefits in Home Affairs, because currently, when you access the National Population Register, every single user must use a fingerprint to be able to access the National Population Register, because we had problems whereby people were printing fraudulent documents because they were using the passport, password, and the username, and somebody will claim that I was working on a transaction, I went to the bathroom, maybe another person has continued working on that transaction. So what we are doing currently is that every user is using the fingerprint to log into the National Population Register. Now, what we have done further is to say that if you are working on a transaction, say you want to produce an ID certificate, the birth certificate, you can type the information, but there are certain functions that you must also put your fingerprint again before you conclude the transaction. One of them is to make sure that before you print the birth certificate, you have to put your fingerprint again. So you cannot say that somebody has worked on this thing and then the other person has printed the birth certificate. The whole transaction has got the audit trail whereby if you change the surname or the ID number or whatsoever, you must put your fingerprint. If you print that certificate, you must put your fingerprint. So that has actually reduced, you know, those fraudulent activities in the department, because we are going to prove, we can prove beyond reasonable doubt that you are the person who has actually worked on the transaction from step number one to the last step. And that was a problem in the past, and we know that in terms of electronic act, you can also submit that to the court of law as an evidence. So that is really helping us. We believe that is the strategy for Home Affairs in terms of IT security, to make sure that the system has got biometric security features. Now, this national identification system with biometric security features will replace the current legacy national population register and also national immigration information system. the one for the asylum seeker management and the refugee centers. The second key project is the life capture for passport and IT and ID. We currently have got a life capture for passport in 40 high volume offices. Now we want to roll out this to all the offices. We have realized that with the life capture, we are actually reaping the benefits in terms of the quality. It has reduced the issues around the fraud. It has also improved the turnaround time, because with the live capture, you sit in front of the system, it capture your picture, you've got electronic pen that you sign, and once you finish, you click, it goes straight to the government printing works, and then you can print the passport. So rightfully, we have been able to produce passport within a day, basically. You can capture that in the morning, in the afternoon, the passport can be printed. Of course, there are logistics in terms of sending the passport back and so forth, but there were emergencies where we were able to produce those passports within 2 or 3 days. We're not saying it's the current situation in the department, because there are other logistics that need to be taken into consideration, posting the passport back to the office of the application and so forth. But basically, if everything was electronic, I'm talking in terms of sending the passport back to the office of the application, you could actually have a passport within a day or 2 days or so. So we want to implement this live capture for the ID as well, but also make sure that all the offices have got the live capture passport and for ID. And you can imagine what's going to be when you have an ID within 2 or 3 days. I think that will change the way Home Affairs look currently. The third one is the online application system for permitting, for visa and civic services. Now, we are saying that we want to reduce the long queues that you find in the Home Affairs offices. Because if we feel that if we provide a web-based application whereby somebody can go to the internet and make an application, and all they come to Home Affairs is to come and verify their fingerprints to say that they are actually the owner of that information, that will reduce all the long queues that we are having in the department, because then all we are going to have is those people that are coming for verification. Because anyway, in the offices of Home Affairs, you cannot get an ID without putting your finger on the online verification to confirm that you're the owner of that information. So we say we want to do that for the online application system for permitting, for visas, so that you can apply wherever you are, and also for IDs and all the documents in the department. The next system is the electronic queue management system. We have implemented this in some of the offices. I think the honorable members will remember that we took them to Barrack Street, where we have changed the office but also implemented the queue management system. This is also helping us not only to manage the queues, but we can also see the efforts that each and every official is putting into their daily work, because you are able to get the report in terms of how many applications this person has performed, whether he or she has worked for 8 hours as is expected. So you are able to pull that report, and we want to implement this system in our offices as well. In the next slide, you've got electronic movement control system. This is the system that we are using at our ports of entry. You'll remember that during 2010 Soccer World Cup, when we stopped the Who Am I Line project, we worked with SARS to implement this system. We currently have it, the new one, in 33 ports of entry, and we have begun rolling out this one again to other ports of entry. So this is another thing that we really need, because for us to be able to control the movement in and out of the country, we need state-of-the-art technology like electronic movement control system. The next one is electronic document management system. I've mentioned the fact that Home Affairs has got huge volumes of papers across the country, and therefore for us to be able to turn the department into a paperless environment, we must first digitize the current manual documents that are found in the offices across the country. And this project also we have begun in terms of planning how we're going to convert those documents into the electronic ones, because we will not be able to complete this DHA system modernization program if we still have got documents coming into the department. We want to have a situation whereby somebody comes to the department and make an application without submitting any document. And of course, the huge dependency is the next project, which is infrastructure upgrade. We couldn't ignore the fact that Home Affairs offices are also in rural areas whereby the issues around infrastructure must be taken into consideration. Infrastructure in this case, we're looking at from IT to the physical building. Some of these solutions that we are going to implement will have to be, we have to really change the way the offices are designed currently in order for this to be implemented successfully. It includes issues around the power, issues around the data lines that are coming to those offices, issues around the way, you know, the offices are being constructed, and so forth. So all those issues have been taken into consideration, because for the system to perform, we will need to upgrade the current data lines or the bandwidth that we're transmitting information to different offices. The next project is what you call the contact center, or what is known as customer services. The current customer services in the department need to be improved in terms of, you know, access to information. Our idea is to have a contact center whereby the user can have the information on a click of a button, so that if a client is phoning inquiring about an ID, the status of ID or any document, the user must be able to go to a computer and access all the systems within Home Affairs. That can only happen if we have integrated all the systems. That can only happen if all the users in the contact center have got access to the system. Currently, we have a situation whereby majority of the calls are being, you know, transmitted to the back office so that they can provide those answers. What I'm saying is that if a user is calling and there's a complex problem, the client center employee must be able to, they must call the office or other units to actually get the information in order for them to give a proper response to the client. Now, we want to make sure that information is available within the contact center by integrating those systems, by making sure that the computer that the client is, the user is having on their desk must have all the information in as far as the systems within Home Affairs. The next one is the Trusted Traveler Systems. This is the system that we have identified is critical for us and for the neighboring countries, where, for example, in Maseru Bridge, you've got people from Lesotho that are traveling in and out of the country on a daily basis, and therefore we want to minimize the queues by having an automated system whereby the people can actually transact without involvement of Home Affairs officials. And therefore, this is the system that we're looking at, and we want to start piloting this in Maseru Bridge once we have designed the system. And the last one, which is a bigger one that has been in the department for a while, is the ID Smart Card, which we are currently in the process of, you know, designing the system. I think there will be introduction or announcement in the next few weeks in terms of the ID Smart Card. And also, this is very critical because at the end of the day, even with live capture, we don't think the green ID book is the relevant document if we have implemented system like live capture. We need to have a smart card whereby, you know, you can use it in various organizations in terms of transaction. Now, these are all the systems that we're planning to implement, and therefore, if we implement this system, we are going to reap those benefits that I've mentioned in the slide number 5. Because what we are saying is that the benefits of the WIO are still going to be reaped through this implementation of DHA system modernization. So we're still going to get the same kind of results, or even more, in terms of what we had envisaged initially with the WIO, but through the what we call now the DHA system modernization. Now, in terms of way forward currently, we are in the process of finalizing the final definitive agreement with key stakeholders this case, I'm referring to Gijima and South African Receiver of Revenue Services. We are currently defining the scope and the statement of work because the whole program is going to cost us $1.2 billion. All those projects that I've mentioned in the past slide are going to cost us $1.2 billion. So this will include the bill of material to determine the specific cost of each and every project. And once we have done that, then we can start with the implementation of IT modernization program, which will begin in the next financial year. And because that's where the budget will now be released. In a nutshell, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Member, this is the IT plans and the high-level budget in terms of what we're planning to do in the next financial year from the 1st of April going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, DDG. We acknowledge the presence of the Deputy Minister amongst ourselves. We are welcome, Deputy Minister. Honourable members, a number of issues were touched on by the DDG. The IT governance, security management, and user access. Time for questions, and I noticed Mr. McIntosh, Maggie Kehwetana, Honorable Gam, Honorable Marcella, Honorable Freitas, in that order.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, DDG Magal. It was a very interesting presentation. I have one question around, or a question around the fingerprinting, another one. On harness, now I remember that was introduced basically by the South African Police Services initially, and it cost a lot of money. And that was about 6 or 8 years ago. Are you going to use the same system, or have we now got a better system than harness? Because one's heard about it, could you just tell us something about what our national fingerprinting archive or record is? And then the question of, as we say in our part of the world, fagistupa. The fingerprinting is to me pretty critical, where you want a good quality fingerprint, and I think we're all pretty familiar with the biometrics. I mean, even the restaurants now, you see the waiters going and putting their fingers on a little biometric reader, which is the same principle, it seems to me, that you're applying, DDG. The thing that interests me is how are you obviating, you know, the ink pad and, you know, the where it slips, and then the poor person is told she's a stupid old woman and she must do her stupa again and so on. Are you going to have electronic scanning as well? And then the second question is the smart card. I think that's a very exciting development, but which other countries in the world have successfully implemented a smart card and a comprehensive ID system? And perhaps you could just share that with us. I don't want to steal the thunder, because I can see the Deputy Minister would be utterly furious if you don't let the ministry or the DG take the credit for all the announcements around the smart card, because it sounds to me as though everybody in the department is very excited about this new development. So we'll wait to open our Christmas box when it comes. But perhaps you could tell us a little bit about what other countries have done and what your kind of golden model is, in terms of other nations that perhaps have already implemented the smart card. Thank you.
No, Robert,
thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, let me first thank the Security Department for the presentation. It's a very good presentation, Chair. Because it's talking about modernizing its system. Because the problem with South Africa, we are far too behind. I want to make a living example. For instance, as members of parliament, we all have laptops. But coming to all the portfolio committee or any other meeting, we always carry the papers. I always ask myself, what is this laptop for anyway? And we always complain that we got the information late and so on. But we have laptops, that information is supposed to go straight into our internet and so on. I think we should be exemplary as members of parliament and start using, taking IT serious. Because South Africa in the whole world is just at the bottom when it comes to IT. Coming to biometrics, I would need a clarity from the DG. Are they only looking at the fingerprint and iris? What about the face and the voice as well? Did they take it into consideration, or is that going to be the second phase of it? And I think also this is going to help Jefferson again. And a living example we have in KZN of this guy, I can't remember the name, that came back from the dead. And both, there are two families, that the other one is claiming that he's dead, the other one is claiming that they did not see the corpse, so he's still living and so on. And the DA, but there's a lot of confusion that is taking place. But if we had this kind of system earlier on, We in future we're not going to experience those kinds of problems. And sorry, another point, Chairperson. Department of Home Affairs is key to identification, and I am not sure whether they are going to work with other various departments regarding the identification, because I think this needs a holistic approach whereby all the departments is going to be integrated, because you go to social security, you go to a new NHR that is going to be introduced. I think this is the key, and all the departments that are supposed to be working with them should come closer. And finally, the smart card. The smart card has been on the pipeline for a long time, and I hope this time is going to be implemented. But I always think, looking at the driver's license, that when you look at the information contained in the driver's license, the smart card for now and ID, how much information is it going to be contained in it? I thought at one stage, we as the portfolio committee will be presented with at least the envisage smart card that the department is coming up with. Thank you, Chair. Honorable Kam.
Thanks, Jane. Yes, thank you very much for the presentation. I think if we look at the presentation, you know, the issue is not about the plans. The plans seem to be very good, but obviously the matter of implementation. And my honourable colleague has alluded to that also in saying that smart card, for example, has been on the cards for quite some time, and some of these other systems as well. You know, today you are saying you are designing the system for the smart card, for example, but this design has been in the making for everyone, wants to say, almost. And when we look, for example, at the quarterly report of the department recently, then and we refer to matters there, like, for example, the item smart card and other systems as well. You know, the remark is not achieved, next to it, not achieved. So the goals haven't been achieved. So can you give us an indication as to when these respective systems will be implemented? Because as the oversight body, obviously we need to get these indications so that we can also hold you to those indications. Secondly, if one read here about Kojima and so on, can you, in your capacity, tell us exactly what their role is going to be? We know there's been a settlement, and as I understand it, they will be managing the systems or whatever the case may be. But can you just tell us exactly what their role will be going forward? And secondly, obviously, the question is, you know, can they be trusted with that role in view of the... can they be trusted not to make a mess again? Because they have clearly made a mess, and that is why there needed to be a settlement. Thirdly, there was talk at some time of the integration of the system pertaining to fingerprints with that of the police, because the police only have access apparently to not too many fingerprints, whilst the department sits with a number of fingerprints. Obviously, in terms of, it was part of the whole review of the criminal justice system as such at the time. Now, what I understand there is a decision has apparently been taken, you know, that we're not going to have an integrated system. They will have to approach the Home Affairs for fingerprints and something to that extent. There's a cooperation agreement or something to that extent. Can you just, you know, tell us more about that and what exactly that entails, and how the police will be able to get access to the vast number of fingerprints that Home Affairs is keeping. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I really appreciate the progressive approach by the Department of Home Affairs, which I do believe that for a very long time we've all been calling for a modernization plan, especially on IT, in ensuring that we keep fraud, terrorism, and any act that will compromise our national population register. The only challenge, of course, is the one that members have alluded to, that a lot has been said before and we all believed and argued and supported. However, to what extent are we going to ensure that within the time limit, as obviously the plan that is displayed in the presentation, that we will be able to deliver this time around? Promises have been made, and we all believe that all was true and good, but not much has been achieved. And obviously, reasons are given, which I believe that some of them are fair, and we take them into account whilst raising these questions. So, Chairperson, the main challenge now is to implement. And I cannot belabor that point any further without saying that all we have good faith in the department. I think they have changed the system, and we've seen dramatic change I personally can say since I've been into this committee. But the GEMA issue and the WIO and the smart card, that is only been the issue that we have a problem with. So, Deputy Minister, this one, I'm sure if you deliver it, the next time around will be the minister. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, firstly, for the comprehensive presentation. Just a few questions. A lot of the questions have been asked already, but I have some additional ones. With regards to these various plans, whereabouts are you? At what stage are you in the timeline of implementation? I mean, I'm not expecting you to be completely specific, but whereabouts are you at 40% of completion or whatever the case is? And have you got deadlines for these various different milestones so that we can sort of just gauge how we're doing? Then, as people, my colleagues have previously said, the smart card sounds very interesting and exciting. What I do want to ask is, and this may be a question that's been asked before in this committee, so I apologize if that's the case, and that is, how smart is this card? So in other words, how much information is actually on the card? And what I mean is, how integrated is it with other information of a person? So for example, a driver license information, criminal record information. I mean, are we at that stage? Or is it purely very basic stuff affecting Home Affairs? And if so, is there a plan possibly in the future to integrate those additional informations like driver's licenses and all sorts of other things? The other question is, I'm presuming, one of my other colleagues did ask, the fingerprinting, I'm presuming the route eventually is to be electronic fingerprinting and not the old-fashioned type of fingerprinting to avoid all the smudging and mistakes that happen. And if so, where are we with that? And then, Chair, you mentioned in the presentation the amount of money. Is this hard cash that the department's actually got, or is it just budgeted over a series of financial years? So just if you could just unpack that a little as far as the financial side of it is concerned, because obviously that could be a constraint. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member. DDG, you may respond to and maybe even the DM if she so
sorry, no, Chair, I'm not going to respond to questions except to make a comment and a request. I think Mr. McIntosh, with his keen political eye, noted that the smart card is something that we do want to reveal at a later stage. And actually, we're targeting it for launch at the budget speech of the minister. And so we do want to request that some of the details pertaining to the smart cards, we would want to reveal it at that stage. If members would be so patient with us, that would be really a good gesture. But just to say that in regards to some of the questions, we can speak to some of the issues. It's not the same as the driver's license. It's not going to even look the same. It's not the same concept at all. We will actually have a pavilion, I think, and we will be showcasing exactly what it feels like, how the system engages with it, and so on during the budget debate, so that members can look at it. And actually what we're looking at is launching it as a pilot. Each of these individuals here, in fact the whole senior management, will actually go onto a smart card. And they will pilot it for a year just to see how, for example, basic things around wear and tear. If you keep the thing in your pocket and you sit on it, does it break? You know, does your picture fade after a few months? You'll see on some of these security cards that your picture actually fades after a few months. On an ID system that is really, that's the basic foundation ID card that you will have, that can't be acceptable. So it's something that we will be doing for a year, and people were saying, you know, you're still in the design processes and so on. Well, let me just say to you that if everything, all systems in government and otherwise depended on this ID, the new smart card as it were, and the design is flawed, well, then you have a huge national crisis. And so you can't take chances with that kind of thing. And this is one of the reasons why we were saying, well, you know, we're going to go slow on this thing, but we are going to do it well. And I think that's the mantra on the smart card. On the other issues, of course, the timelines and so on, the DDG will speak to, and that
we certainly will not keep you in suspense on those issues.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you,
Chief. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and the members for the questions. Mm-hmm. Just with the starting with the Honorable McIntosh's questions, the issue around the harness, whether we're still going to use the same harness or will be a better system. You will remember that when Home Affairs was designing the harness and other systems, the approach that they took back then was designing standalone specific system for specific application and so forth. So you have NPR standalone, you have harness standalone and so forth. The approach that we are taking now is to take all the elements of the current and design the system that will give us a single view of a person. So if you have a person with an ID number, punch that ID. You must be able to see that person's fingerprint, the details, whether he's a foreigner or a South African, whether he's married, he's got how many kids, which countries have he traveled, and so forth. So you must be able to have a single logical view of a person. Now, that is our approach. That's why we say we want to use the service-oriented architecture. This is the design at the back, which will make sure that if I'm the user sitting in an office in Barrack Street, whether the system at the back and office are integrated, I must be able to see only one system when I'm punching the information. Now, what we are saying is that there are certain elements of, because we have invested within the systems like Honey's over the years, we're not going to discuss those systems. But what we are going to do is to take certain elements within Honey's. For example, within Honey's, we are more interested in the fingerprints because we have digitized our fingerprints into the Honey system. Now, when we're designing the national identification system, which will have the biometrics, what we are going to have is the two parallel systems at one stage, whereby now we're going to migrate the information from different systems, including Honey's and NPR. But that data must also be cleaned up so that we have quality data into the new system. And then once we are comfortable, then we will have a system that you can actually have one single logical view of a person, which will comprise of key elements from different systems within Home Affairs. Another example is that you've got asylum seeker management, which is at our refugee centers. There is no communication between that system and the movement control system, where the very same people that are asking for asylum seeker and permanent residents are going through that system. So we want to make sure that if somebody is sitting in Port Elizabeth and there's a client that is crossing over in Maseru Bridge or Bay Bridge, that person must be able to be seen from anywhere in the Home Affairs office. So that is the approach that we are taking. Secondly, your question around the archive and records is part of the electronic document management system. We're saying currently we've got a lot of manual documents in the department. We're going to digitize those records into electronic so that we can actually archive them somewhere, because in terms of the National Archive Policy Act, you've got classification of documents and in terms of their lifespan. There are certain information that you cannot destroy within 100 years, others you can destroy within 10 years. Now, if you look at the number of documents, the type of documents we're having across the department, including the missions abroad, you've got categories of documents which can only be destroyed according to the Act. Some will take 10 years, some will 100 years, and so forth. So based on that, we'll archive those information, and therefore we'll need to provide things like the storage infrastructure for that information. The question, your question around the fingerprint as well, the quality, the issues around the ink pads, we're not going to use the ink anymore. There are systems or scanners that you can put the 10 fingerprints and take those fingerprints into the system within a click of a button, and then it gives you all the quality. Some of the scanners we produced recently that we have seen is that you can even roll your finger across. But you don't need that actually, because for now, even if you put your finger, you know, the tip of the finger, the scanners are so sensitive that they are able to capture your minutiae, and then they can be read at any time. So, but the bottom line is that we're not going to use the ink anymore. We're totally going to do away with that because we're going to have electronic scanners. I think the Deputy Minister has answered the issue around the smart card, but you ask about the countries. I can just give you an example that Germany has implemented the smart card, a highly integrated one, which is speaking to, you know, a number of departments. Malaysia as well, they've done that. There are a number of countries, but I think also the way the government in other countries structured is different to our country. For example, in other countries, you've got police and home affairs being one department and transport being one department. So you don't need to go and negotiate the requirement from other departments because it's one department. So immediately you have integrated requirements. I think the challenge with our country is that we've got different requirements from different departments, and we have to come to a point whereby we have, you know, single requirements that can be used to design the smart cards. The Honorable Mkhwane, the issue around the fingerprint, you are 100% correct. Part of what we are using as iris, as a biometric, is not only fingerprint. We also go using the voice and face recognition. The MCS that we are designing at the ports of entry that will be rolled out will include issues around face and voice recognition, which is something that we have learned from other countries as well. What we're not going to use currently is the iris. We're not comfortable with the iris, having learned from other countries. In fact, recently the British have stopped the Irish at the Heathrow Airport because, you know, people are going in and out of the country. If you've got a terrorist who has managed to get through, you know, that port of entry, and then the system will capture your fingerprint, your eye, then that person will just walk in and out of the country without. So, it's got some challenges here and there. So. But also, we felt that the fingerprint biometric has matured in such a way that it becomes easier now to get a technology that has to do with the fingerprint rather than the iris. The face and voice recognition, not really a complex a biometric, so it's part of what we are using. We're going to be using going forward. Working with other various departments, our implementation currently, as we are talking, would involve the SARS. But also, we are collaborating with other organizations. An example is the one that we've done with the banks, the automated fingerprint verification system. We've got a huge interest from other industries like the insurance and private security, which we have concluded the memorandum of understanding with them. But we've got other government departments, social development that we're working with, the SASA, the police. Yesterday in the Exco, we have talked about the request from the police to interface with Home Affairs. We've been, you know, having discussion with the police through the Integrated Justice System Cluster, I think which is part of the JPS. Therefore, we approved yesterday in Exco that from the 1st of April, we must start working with the police and make sure that the police, they interface with Home Affairs Identification System. Because we cannot continue making improvements with the private sector. And the government departments are not on board in terms of this. I think the smart card, we've answered that. The question from Honorable Gam, the lack of implementation, yes, that's a serious concern, but I can you know, tell you right now that from the 1st of April, there will be serious implementation in terms of the systems that we are currently April, in the new financial year, because that's where we will have you know, the budget for the new financial year to start implementing this system. Where I'm sitting, I think in the next financial year, by this time, you would have seen or experimented with some of the systems within Home Affairs offices and so forth. Our plan is to make sure that, as we have done with the electronic queue management system, we'll make sure that the honorable members can come and experiment with the system as we develop them. And the role of Kijima, which you have asked, is that part of what we're doing the analysis in the past, when we were doing the settlement, even before we get there, we've realized and we knew that the biggest challenge that Kijima had was lack of skills in terms of the software development. They are good in terms of hardware distribution, desktop support, where you fix computers and you connect them to printers and so forth. That is their core business. But where you do what you call the software engineering, you design an application, a program to talk to the computer, it's not their core business. And therefore, even if you look at the whole structure of the consortium, that was the subcontract. So going forward, part of the settlement, the agreement is that Kijima will only look after the issues around the hardware distribution and so forth. Anything that has to do with software development, software engineering, will be the responsibility of Home Affairs in collaboration with SARS. So we have managed that risk because that was the biggest risk. But over and on top of that, initially what happened is that in Home Affairs, we didn't have senior management within IT and projects. And if you look at the figures that we have currently, we've appointed a number of senior managers within IT, a number of directors, we've got a number of software developers permanent, because we were relying on consultants, and there was issues around lack of sustainability when the projects are implemented, because those consultants, they disappear. And therefore, now we have mitigated that risk. We've got senior managers, we've got infrastructure specialists, and we are continuing to do that. In fact, if you remember as well, even in the provinces, we had technicians that were outsourced. But we have dealt away with that. We've got technicians that are home affairs employees that are supporting our system across the country. It's not 100%, but we are moving in that direction. And I think we believe that we have done a lot in terms of that so far. The interface with the police, I've already answered on that one. The question and the comments from Honorable Mandela, appreciate that. I think you also raised the issue around the implementation, which is something that has been our concern. But from the 1st of April, we'll see some serious implementation. We've put together, you know, resources that will be focusing on that. It's a steering committee that will be driven by DG, where all the DGs and the EXCO members are sitting, will be sitting every Thursday, actually starting from this Thursday, together with the executives from SARS and so forth. So this program will be driven at a higher level. And also there's another governance structure where the deputy minister is chairing and the minister is sitting. That's where they will get feedback on a frequent basis in terms of the implementation. Because, you know, if you look at the best practices and some of the critical success factors of projects in IT, and some of the reasons why the projects in IT are failing, number one is lack of top management support. They go and say, this is the project that must be implemented, and after that, the top management withdraw from that in terms of implementation. So that is something that not going to do in home affairs. This will be driven from that level. The approach that we have taken during the 2010 Soccer World Cup will continue, because the very same steering committee is the same one that we used during the implementation of project within Soccer World Cup, 2010 Soccer World Cup. Honorable Freitas, the issue around the percentage, we will be beginning the implementation from the 1st of April in terms of this program. All I can tell you now is that with the electronic movement control system, the second phase has begun. In fact, they are already doing the testing in 6 ports of entry. The users have already signed in terms of that. But the actual, the real chunk of implementation will be from the 1st of April. So we'll give you the update in terms of, how far we are in terms of this. The issue around the fingerprint to be manual, I've already mentioned that we're not going to have any ink. It's going to be scanners, and therefore the fingerprint will be electronic. Does Home Affairs have hard cash or budget? This has been budgeted for as part of the program, so it's within those MTF periods. And so that money is available from the 1st of April. It's a question of implementation and start spending the money. I hope the Honorable Chairperson has managed to answer all the questions in this case. Thank you.
Thank you,
DM.
Any other questions?
Just very briefly, I think DDG has covered most things. It's just a few emphasis. When we talk about an integrated system, taking your harness, taking your NIPS, taking your movement control system, getting it into one integrated system, that's not going to happen firstly overnight. What we're planning, and DDG touched on this, but I don't think he emphasized it enough, is that we will still retain these separate systems until we have sufficient comfort that this new system is sufficiently integrated, works well, etc., etc. So that if anything were to go wrong, that we still have those backup systems to fall back on. Because it's far too important to us to get this thing right. The other issue that I think we need to emphasize is that, remember, there are a few problems at the moment with the NPR, for example, where people are sharing IDs and so on. Those we hope to clean up as we migrate into this integrated system. So that's also going to take a degree of time. So it's not going to be a situation where one day you have all these disintegrated systems and the next day you suddenly have an integrated system. You're actually going to run parallel systems for a long time until you find comfort that this new system is, you know, can fly. So that is something that I think members must look out for, because I know that as part of your oversight, you are very keen that we give you definite timelines and so on and so on. But this is a massive undertaking. And Chair, you would understand that we can't afford to have any small glitches, because a small glitch in our system becomes a huge national crisis. And so really and truly what we're looking at is working on a phased basis, assessing, and then continuing. So it's not going to be an overnight process where you suddenly say, well, we're going to achieve this by that day. You might find that in the different phases, we might have to say, okay, let's step back a bit, and let's improve this, that, and the other. And so it's a constant assessment, and then moving on to the next phase. As we do that, we think we will find that the system itself would meet all of the needs that we have, but also the partnering departments and other stakeholders. Certainly, as far as the implementation is concerned on some of these aspects, of course, the 1st of April being the new financial year, a lot of that was cost dependent, and so we will start implementing. But by this time next year, you'll still find that there are certain portions that we are still piloting. It is not going to, as I say, happen overnight. So it's just something that I want to caution. As much as I think we will have made enormous amounts of progress from where we are now, you're still going to find us coming here and saying we're piloting this, we're piloting that, we're piloting the other. So that we don't give you the impression that by next year this time everything will be in place. So it's just too much of a massive undertaking, too much rides on this for us to give you that impression. And really on this issue, we would be very grateful if the portfolio committee would take a keen interest in, you know, looking at some of these aspects from your oversight perspectives, and really partner with us to say, look, we think that there might be a problem, there might be a problem. Because as we go through, that's really what we're looking for, is to check that we've covered all our bases. And it's not something that you suddenly can just sit, you know, in front of a piece of paper and say, well, these are all the things that we want. There are one or two things that you forget that, oh, by the way, the police need this, or social services need that. So as much as we try and consult with all of our stakeholders and so on, as members of parliament, you have a unique perspective as well. And so we will rely on feedback from you in this regard as well. Thanks.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. My concern is around the electronic movement control, especially at points of entry. I support that the systems could run parallel, you know, in other systems, but with regard to the movement control of people coming in and departing from the country, I think it's proper that there's a linkage of systems there, so that we actually know who comes into the country and who is leaving. Mm-hmm. At present, we don't have proper figures as to who is in the country and who is not in the country, which is a problem for us. We have people who are loitering the country, some we don't even know if we have such people in the country. Like the very case of this Russian guy whom we saw on TV last night. We knew nothing about such people that are in the country. And it's a problem for us, for our system, that it will be good if our systems are linked, especially at ports of entry. I hear the DDG mentioned that there are 33 ports of entry where this EMC is linked, but I think it would be proper if it's properly managed and there is linkage around the ports of entry. Honorable Bosman will be followed by Honorable Nisi and Honorable Martin Trash will be the last.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine was to ask on the interdepartmental policies and agreements that you have. Are they there? And because we are dealing in a situation where once this is being implemented, then the other person is doing it this way or administering it in a certain manner in which that might affect us as a department. And we also, there's an issue raised in terms of movement at the port of entry. But I'm also thinking of this huge migration in terms of work-related issues. For instance, the mine industry. You have a huge number of people coming into the country at the same time because they've now been recruited from Deba. What is the link of the system of Deba and such agencies? And also, I think the Deputy Minister has answered the issue of the backup. But the other thing I wanted to also indicate there is whether we have audit trails that will then pick up on what has been happening on the system through and through. Furthermore, what has been raised by the chairperson to say, people are coming into the country and leaving the country. Does the system, will it be able to flick? If, for instance, I've overstayed, I haven't as yet to have gone back, how do you pick up that I'm still in the country? You know, I used to use a system whilst working at Ellerin Holdings. If a customer was supposed to pay today and that customer did not come on that day, the following morning when you just get into the system, it flickers all the customers that were supposed to pay yesterday and they have not yet paid. So you just print out that with their contacts and you contact the customer and find out what is happening. So I was just checking on that, whether we have something like that. Normally when you apply for an ID passport or whatever, after some time you'll get an SMS that says your passport or whatever is ready, you can come and pick it up at the Home Affairs. But what I'm asking is, at the moment I go to that counter and pick up this, what happens? Does the system get information that I've already collected now so that you are able to pick up on who has not collected? It's not a matter of relying on manual count of IDs that were not collected. I think indirectly the other issue relating to population register with other countries, I don't know whether the system is linked to that, or you only pick up people as they come, but you are unable to check whether this person is a citizen, he's got dual citizenship or what. Also, Chair, what we've picked up as we visit the border post is the fact that some people are crossing just not far away from the very entry, the legal entry. They would just go about 500 meters away, then you find there's a hole or something that people just go through. And do we have some CCTV cameras or whatever that are monitoring that, and a person who's manning that to ensure that as and when there's movement, they are able to report and make sure that things are happening in time. Lastly, Chair, I think this is my recommendation. In terms of the registration of birth, which is now only 30 days after that. Within 30 days, you must do it within 30 days. In the rural areas, is it not proper or maybe advisable that, as Homa says, we also introduce rural development officers? I don't know what we're going to call them, as Homa says. But basically to ensure that they check on, because in rural areas you'd find some kids would not, I mean, people won't give birth in hospitals. They will give birth just at home. And it takes time for them to get to home affairs, and ultimately you get this link still going on. For us to close up for what is happening now this late registration, so that at least there's someone there from Home Affairs who can be able to indicate to Home Affairs that there's two kids that are born in my village or whatever, and we are able to make sure that those particular children are being registered in time. I don't know, but I think it is something that we have to look at. I know I could see the cost of the system, but I think there's an amount that was written off. There's an additional amount that is then budgeted for now, of which it would be important if we get an explanation in terms of the write-off and the new millions that have been budgeted for 2012. Thank you, Chair.
Another one, McIntosh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, that was a very interesting set of answers. Thank you, DG. I just have a question on the information system. You mentioned that you wanted to have under, I presume it is, I don't know all these acronyms, but anyway, whatever it is, so that if you want to, you can look onto a person's record and see how many times they went in and out of the country, you know, how many children they've got, etc., etc. Now, I don't think that's unreasonable necessarily, but what concerns me is, let's take a hypothetical situation. We've just had 30 Spanish Cubans out training, a port of entry people. Now, what these guys presumably had to train port of entry onto dealing with the electronic elements. I don't know how far advanced Cuba is in that world, but let's supposing those guys are now saying to the chap, well, now you scan and there this comes up. What levels are there? I mean, will an official at a port of entry or that Cuban guy be able to look up and say, oh, well, he has Ban Ban, and good heavens, he's got three wives and he's got 12 children, or this guy's never been married, but he goes in and out of the country all the time at Swaziland. What levels do you have there on it? And then I think the Deputy Minister's assurance on the importance, and I think it is a huge risk. We want to make haste slowly on a thing like this. It's huge and very important. But and I know the technology isn't the same, but what I found very interesting is when I went to observe the elections on a parliamentary observer team in 2000 in Zimbabwe, the Zimbabweans had a very nice ID card. I know it's not a smart card and we've gone long past it, but it had a photograph, it was nicely marked, it was aluminium, an aluminium card, so it was almost indestructible. And so the white ants couldn't eat it, nothing could happen to it. But it was well, look, I accept that it can't. But I mean, to me, I just thought that was a very sensible, practical thing for a country like Zimbabwe. And you could read the photograph easily, and it was a very good idea. Well, obviously that was 12 years ago. We moved on since then.
Honourable Khaitan.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I would like to the DG to elaborate more on trusted traveller system. Because when I heard during the week last week, the DG was on TV, and there are about 120,000 duplicated IDs. And when you look at the number of the people that are getting the social grants, it's almost the same number. And one, you could immediately say this is related, and is the problem not around the border gate? The people that are on the other side are coming every day to come and get their grants from this side. I think there is a relation between the two. That's why I need more clarity on the trusted travelers, because the people are coming every month to get pensions from this side. What is the envisaged plan regarding this particular issue?
Honorable Marcella.
Thank you, Chairperson. The first question is, what has been done to address the IT security shortfalls which were identified by the Director General, by the Auditor General, rather, in the areas of IT governance? Because I think those are important to reflect on what has been done and what are the shortcomings before we look at the way forward. Also, what are the measures in place to improve and expand the use of mobile technology in the provision of services by the Department of Home Affairs? Chair, what are the different phases and costs involved in the rollout of the UMI online project in the next 3 years? So furthermore, if you look at the current challenges that we have in the country, that we have an economy that is demanding certain skills, but then we've got a supply of skills that are not necessarily integrated to the economic challenges. So to what extent are we going to attract those skills and in fact ensure that we have the necessary skills when we need to implement this process? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Honourable Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Mine was just a clarity-seeking question. I needed a further clarification on the trusted traveler system as to how is it going to operate and how is it going to assist us. My other question is, on the life capture passport. What are the different phases and costs involved in the life capture passport and ID? And what is your clear plan in rolling out this program? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Honourable Deputy Minister. Now, I'll leave all of the difficult questions to the DG to answer. But I think, members, we must deal with this issue of the notion of people crossing our borders to collect social grants. I think that is a matter that should please us all. There are two things here that I want to just address. And the first is that, you know, you don't deal with issues of that nature by stopping people from coming to the country. You don't deal with the corruption in social services by stopping the movement either at Maseru or anywhere else. I mean, it's not just Lesotho that we share a border with. Swaziland, Mozambique, Botswana, Zimbabwe, you name it. And so clearly what we would need to do is to look at the problem and then try and address the problem. And the way we do that is twofold. The first is within Home Affairs. Clearly we have to clean up our system. Now part of this whole process of integrating will be the whole cleanup issue. The reason why we have isolated that number of duplicate IDs is precisely so that we can start working through those. and to ensure that the correct people have their correct IDs and so on. You would recall that part of the problem with this is the fact that people apply for IDs when they register their children, and then by the time they're 16, people don't come up and collect their IDs, and so those ID numbers stand there, and that really allows for the kind of corruption that we've seen in the past. Of course, all of these efforts that DDG is talking about around biometrics, who issued that ID? From now on, we would have somebody's fingerprint attached to the issue of it. So we're curbing future corruption, but now we have to deal with the backlog, the stuff that has already been. And that's part of our processes in terms of cleaning up this project. And that's why you saw the DG on TV saying, this is the number that we have to deal with, and this is how we're going about dealing with it. But over and above that, it's also the responsibility of social welfare to clean up their system. And this is why you would have seen this this undertaking by the minister last week and the week before, and the announcement that came that said that every person who is in receipt of a social grant will be required to come and report. And I think this has to be done periodically, as far as they're concerned, because clearly if you have a system where you just continue paying and people don't register that somebody has, for example, died, somebody else can collect. And so that's not necessarily an issue regarding a duplicate ID, but what it is fraud. And so they need to clean up their systems as well by requiring people to actually come and report and get their details. And I think those things are in the pipeline now. So the issue of just dealing with it on the basis that we, you know, have to stop people coming into the country in order to prevent fraud and so on, it's just a spurious argument in many respects, and actually would be very detrimental to many of the businesses that rely on that flow along the borders and so on. And so I think what we're saying is we need to work smarter, and we need to be more effective in the way that we deal with such problems, and that it has to be a process that dovetails. On the one hand, home affairs, but on the other hand, social welfare as well.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Thank you, Chairperson. Just to, also reiterate what the Chairperson has raised earlier on, it's true that the issue around integration or lack of integration in the other ports of entry is really a concern for us, because we currently have got the new movement control system in the 33 ports of entry. And therefore, in those 33 ports of entry, you are able to see the integration of movement as people are coming in and out of the country. And hence, we are now rolling out to the remaining other ports of entry, which still have got the legacy system. And once we've got this, all the ports of entry with the new movement control system, that problem will be dealt with. But it is a concern, yes, we agree with that, Chairperson. Honorable Bothman, in terms of the interdepartmental policies and agreement, our first step in terms of working with other government departments is to have engagement, at that high level, from DG level and even at the ministerial level. Because what we have is that we do have a MOU with each and every department, and we believe that that is probably taking care of issues around policies, an agreement that the department would have with a specific department. So that is part of the process that we are currently using. So we have the MOU with the department, which is signed by the Director General, and therefore before any other implementation, there has to be that agreement. It also happened with the private sector institution. You've raised the issue around the migration of the miners into the country. When we were interfacing with the banks, TEBA was actually part of the banks that through the SABRIC. Unfortunately, the integration means that Home Affairs do the development from their side, and a specific bank will do the development so that the system can communicate. Now, you've got banks that have got resources like your FNB and Absa, the big banks, which were able to do that within a very short space of time. But you've got other banks like your African Bank, your Capitec, and your TEBA that are also slow in terms of doing that. And once they are ready with the interface from that side, you know, the interface from Home Affairs is available to all the banks to do this application. Of course, you have those banks that individually want to engage with Home Affairs, but the link is the same. It's just for them to make sure that they can connect to the department. So that dependency will be from their side, because from outside, we have opened that pipe with all those security features which anyone can use.
You know, I want us to also address that in terms of TEBA as the Employment Bureau agency.
Okay.
Because then people come here, they get retrenched, they don't go back home, they remain in the country, and then comes the problem for us. How do you then monitor the fact that as they get into the country, is the system linked to know how many mine workers have been recruited into our country to come and work, and when things are happening, how do we then ensure that they really have crossed our borders to go back home? You know,
I think just to link that to your next question of the system flagging the overstay, currently the system does not flag the overstay. It's only when a person tried to cross the border that system will be able to recognize that this person is overstayed. Maybe that's another proactive means that we will take and make sure that we get it, because I think it's good. But the only challenge is that you also cannot, I guess it will have to go beyond that, because once you recognize that this person is still in the country, there has to be the next action again. So it goes beyond that, but we'll look into that issue. The issue around the audit trail, yes, each and every transaction is linked to a person, so you will know that Cello has performed this transaction up to here, and the merger has started with this. So they've got inherent audit trail system currently. That's why even with the National Population Register, we are saying we're confident that you know, the challenges we are facing are not really new challenges. Most of them are old before we implemented the biometric access for the users. Updating when collecting the ID, yes, it's happening. Once you get an ID, the system is updated to say that you have collected the ID. Just like when, you know, because if you get an SMS to say the office is ready for collection, it means it got to that office and it was scanned. Once it's scanned, the check and trace is triggered to say that you must collect it. And also when you collect, same update is happening, just that you don't get the SMS to say you have collected your ID. It's for our information. The issue around entry illegally through a hole, you know, this is a bigger problem, because in any port of entry, we've got other stakeholders that should work with Home Affairs, you know, the police, SADF, are guarding our borders and so forth. But within Home Affairs vicinity, yes, we're planning to have the CCTV systems, but it's not going to resolve the problem you're talking about. But what we are currently doing is that through the Border Management Agency, there is a forum currently that is happening every Wednesday, where you've got the Chetau teaching, but also you've got stakeholders from staff, senior management from police, SNTF, to looking at this issue, because it's a very critical issue that not only Home Affairs can deal with this. Police alone cannot deal with this. SNTF, it needs a collaboration from you know, different departments. And I think it's a very important fact that you are raising, and therefore the little that we are doing, Home Affairs and the police, once those things are coming together and other stakeholders, then we'll be able to deal with the issue currently. So I think that should be resolved through that agency. Major will deal with the issue around the introduction of rural development officers.
Yes, thank you. My response is that in the last session with the Popular Committee, we did report that we have established the stakeholder forums. And in fact, that we ended with the establishment phase. Now we're going to move to operational phase. So I think that the points that are raised were that could take note of them to ensure that, to see how do we then integrate them as part of operation, because it's not only the issue of birth registration, there's also death registration, there's also the movement of persons. If, for instance, we've got a person that comes to an area and the person is a stranger, you know, people need to verify whether the person has got documentation or not. So it's much more broader than that. It's the whole issue of around how to ensure that it is able to protect the community that you're living in. So we'll look into those aspects.
Okay, thank you. Coming to Honorable McIntosh's questions, the issue around the training by the Cubans and so forth. The answer there is quite simple, because when you do a training in terms of the system, you don't need to have the actual data. We simulate the data, we can get information that is not a wrong ID number or any number, even if it's not 13 digits, just for the sake of the training. It's about people understanding how the system will work. And of course, once you have that training, then you pilot the system in the actual environment, and that's where the users will actually experiment with the system. And also that depends on how complex the system is. You can actually do the training in a simulated lab, and then without really piloting it, it's not a complex thing. You can actually start piloting it in that environment as well before you go into a live environment. So, in fact, also within Home Affairs, from security point of view, not everybody has got access to all the information. It's the same thing in terms of interfacing with other government departments. We know that even if you have the link to the department, you can only see the ID number and the name. That's it. Depends. We can give you access to see the name, ID number, and everybody that is linked to that. So the system has got what you call a read-only. And that's it. You read, and that thing is like an Adobe Acrobat. If you have a document that is printed with that, you cannot change it. It's gray out there. You won't be able to change it. So the training will be in that phase. The issue around the Zimbabwe card, as the department, our card will be a bit advanced in terms of what you're talking about, because we feel that security is very important. If you have a smart card which, for example, does not have biometrics, does not have a chip, and so forth, I think in South Africa you've got smart people that can really duplicate that card within a very short space of time. But once you have, you know, highly secured security features like a chip, which has got a write only, you know, once you write into that information, you cannot make changes to that. So it's a bit more sophisticated, but I think the TM has already mentioned that they will announce in terms of that going forward. The Honorable Wakani, the Trusted Travelers System. I think TM has answered that. But the bottom line is that the system that we're going to use there, from technology point of view, it's about using the biometrics. So you will have a person who comes to the country and puts a fingerprint there, which will be linked to his passport number and ID. And we'll be able to know that it is you who has crossed the border and so forth. But part of what we are doing is linking that system to the movement control system, to the population register, to the NPR, I mean the asylum seeker management, will help us to have a holistic view in terms of what has this person done and so forth. And we also take into consideration the inputs from Honorable Bosman to say maybe we need to flag the system But beyond that, then we need to take an action if somebody, you know, overstayed in the country. Honorable Marcella, in terms of IT security, we have really implemented quite a number of highly sophisticated technology within the department. And we have identified the gaps together with the AG. One of them is the issue around people accessing NPR, and we were not able to trace who was using or who created the user ID in NPR. But now with the biometric, that has completely stopped. The point is, people knows that if they access NPR and they do something on the NPR, we will be able to know who has performed that transaction. So that has deterred people from actually performing illegal transactions. It might be happening, but we know that if we discover that you have done something like that, it will be clear and simple for us to be able to prove and pick up who has done that. So that's why with NPR, every person who works on the NPR must access the system using the biometric. Now, coming from outside, how we stop the hackers, we've got what we call intruder prevention and detection system, which will actually flag somebody who's trying to enter into the department long before this person is getting to detect in terms of accessing the system. So those are the technologies that we have implemented. Also, we've got firewalls within home affairs systems. We've got firewalls that we have put at CETA, because CETA is the entry of all government departments network. So we have implemented firewalls within the home affairs head office, the data center where all the systems are controlled. We have implemented firewalls in the CETA, and also in the regional office, in the high volume offices, we have put those security. And if we analyze in the past year or so, we've never even had an attempt from outside. I think because these people are smart. Once they realize that you have implemented those security features, they immediately move away. If you look at the post office, for example, the biggest issue there is that they did not implement, you know, high technology firewalls. That's why even if you work with people within the department and you have implemented those firewalls, it's going to be very difficult for you to actually cross over. And you must have level of steps. Don't only implement firewall in one place. You can actually have three levels where you have put the firewall. If you break into this one, you still have got this one that will flag that this person, there's somebody who has you know, got into the system, and then you block that before, you know, it's too late. So that is something that we have done. So, and also we've got the, from the network point of view, we've got the network management monitoring, which we are checking, we're getting reports in terms of who was attempting to, if there was any attempt into our system and so forth. So from the outside, that's what we have done. And we're working in collaboration with AG to make sure that, because we cannot, as Home Affairs, that we have implemented this security system. Somebody must come independently and actually test as to whether what we have implemented is working or not. The issue around the measures to improve mobile offices. We are in the process of concluding the satellite technology for the mobile offices, because it has to be a serious mobile office. You must be able to print everything. You must be able to do exactly what you're doing in a normal physical structure of Home Affairs office. So what we are doing with this satellite technology is also going to help us in the rural areas. In fact, if you go to most of the tuition centers that we have spoken recently, the rule is that if the office is not connected, and it's not, that office cannot be open. If the DM or the minister is going to open an office, that office must be able to print, must be able to do everything that you are doing, whether it's a tuition center and so forth. So if you look at offices that we have opened recently, even in the deep rural areas where there's no infrastructure like telco, we are using the satellite. Our office will always be connected. That's the route to open the office. And that's the technology that we are using in the mobile office, the satellite technology, which we were working in collaboration with CenTech. The different phases of WIO, this is what we are finalizing, and we will only be able to give that information in the new financial year in terms of the phases and the, you know, the time frame of the actual implementation. How we are tracking this, attracting the skill to implement the program? We have done a resource planning technically in terms of what we need, and we are working in collaboration with SARS. We know the capacities are in SARS, the capacities are in Home Affairs, and we are comfortable now that we've got sufficient resources to be able to implement the project successfully from technical point of view and so forth. And what we are doing as well is that there's going to be a robust change management across the department, because you don't implement a system as big as this one and then you don't prepare the users of the system. Be overwhelming for them if we don't train them, and that's why we have designed the governance structures whereby we make sure that we get buy-in from the department across in terms of implementation, that they take ownership during the implementation, they be part of those steering committees or structures across the department. So that has been taken care of, the issue of implementation, as you mentioned. Honorable Missy, and the Trusted Travelers program has been answered. The life capture, the phases, the cost, and the rollout plan. Again, this is what we will provide the information in the new financial year. But what we are saying is that the life capture will be for both passport and ID. We've got 40 offices now with the passport. And the plan is to have life capture in each and every office. And that will be happening in the next financial year.
Thank you, DDG. Yes, we have live capture machines in the offices, but when something goes wrong with those with that machine, it becomes a problem. We have a small office in my PCO DM in Dobsonville, where we have a Home Affairs office there. They have an online machine there. But when when there's something wrong with that, we wait straight up to 6 months waiting for a technician to come and assist, you know, in repairing that. I think that needs to be looked into, because we can't be having machines and not have people who are going to repair when there's a problem. My other question is with regard to is the Department of Home Affairs engaging the Department of Public Service Administration in terms of the e-governance framework and the government IT security policy? And my second question is with regard to the Kijima hardware DM. I may phrase this not in the way I want to phrase it, but there was that concern that in the beginning the department bought the hardware and Kijima was actually charging the department, I'm sure, some lease or renting of the hardware, if I remember the story well. My question is, what is the new agreement with regard to the hardware? Because I heard the DPG referring to the hardware by Kijima. Is that our property, or do we still going to have this funny arrangement that was there before the DPG?
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. I will look at the issue around Dobsonville office, because we do have technicians across the country, including the Soweto area and so forth. So it shouldn't really take that long for people to restore their office. In fact, we've got a turnaround time of up to between 3 hours to 26 hours. That should happen. So I'll look into that because it shouldn't. And also, if there's an office, any office that has got live capture, it's got the scanning technology, which is an option. If live capture is not working, you've got the system that you are using in other offices other than the 40 offices. So that shouldn't be an issue, because sometimes we know the users For example, in Pietermaritzburg, they've actually mentioned to some of the clients who say, no, life capture is not working, and therefore they don't even tell them that you can use the other system because the user was insisting on using the life capture, and he was not aware that there is an option to that. And so, but we will look into that, Chairperson. Engaging the GPSA, Chairperson, there's a monthly committee which is called GTOC, Government Information Technology Officers, where I'm the member of that committee, which is driven by the GPSA, and that's where we are discussing the issues around IT across the country, how we approach IT, because we can actually reduce the current huge spending of IT if we work in collaboration with other departments. A typical example is in the case as Home Affairs, whereby, for example, with the EDMS, we're going to use the scanning center that SARS has got currently. We don't have to buy, you know, equipment around that because SARS is part of government. If you look at Home Affairs, for example, at Hallmark, we have implemented state-of-the-art data center, which if anyone wants to host their system, they can go and put their server in there because it's a... So you've got other government departments that you can actually leverage on their current infrastructure and equipment, rather than each and every department actually buying the equipment, which they can use other government departments' equipment. And that's where we also look at a number of streams. We're looking at the issues around governance. We look at the issue around security, because initially the government was not doing things as prescribed by the King Report 2 or King Report 3. It was only private sector that was actually aligning itself in terms of King Report 3 or 2 from the government's point of view. So the government has now adopted that to say that we must, even though we're not a profit gaining organization, we need to use the elements of King Report 3 in terms of governance, security, and so forth. Because the only way you can know that you are good is if you benchmark yourself against the best framework or practices, and therefore that's why we have adopted this. On the Gijima hardware, the chairperson is correct. We were leasing those equipment, but as part of settlement, the reason why we paid the settlement, it was because now we had to actually pay those equipment and the software. So we own them as Home Affairs, and they will form part of the DHA modernization going forward. The storage that we bought from IBM and the licenses, those equipment, we're going to use them. They are not actually wasted. So we will continue using the equipment. Thank you.
No, thank you, DTG. Thank you, DM. For all the answers that we are enlightened, and we look forward to seeing the implementation of the IT systems, because it's our concern that the Home Affairs is a security department. We need proper security in there so that we do not have people who can access our systems easily. So it is important that we have a secured security system. Thank you very much, DN. And thank you, DDG. We now go to our next item, which is the adoption of the last week. Thank you. In case you want to leave, you are excused. You may leave. Quietly, so. Yeah, honorable members, we are continuing with our meeting. We are supposed to look at the presidential state-owned entities review. We were supposed to, in fact, yeah, to slip over the document. And today we are supposed to come up with amendments to what our researcher has put together on our behalf.
it is upon the members to... guide me as to we align ourselves with what the researcher has put in place. Do we have any additions, subtractions? Honorable members, we start with the FPB. Do we all have the FPB document? FPB? No. We should have two documents, FPB and GPW. You had that from last week.
Are you going to ask him, sir?
On page 2 of FPB.
Yeah.
Are we together, the second paragraph?
Thank you. I'm just trying to understand what's the logic of it being in the Department of Home Affairs. Having read information and this bill, it pertains to giving advice to consumers on what it is that they can view and read and so forth. And also, the way I see it, would also look at things like freedom of speech and that kind of thing, and which I'm trying to connect, to get the connection with Home Affairs. I would have actually maybe put in a curveball and saying that perhaps it would fall under the bottom of constitutional development or something like that. It actually has to do with free speech and so forth, which is one of the rights in the Constitution. So I'm just trying, maybe someone could just explain how it is that it fits in with within Home Affairs. Thanks.
Any other view? Maybe to explain further that the FPB is an entity that classifies the films that come into the country as to whether it's an SS whatever, or it should be viewed by children at whatever time, or should not be viewed between whatever time or the different ages. That is why it was put under the Home Affairs. And as we hear, it's an international practice that the FPB is under Home Affairs, because it is responsible for whatever material that comes into the country regarding the films. And now that we have this technology things and pawns and what have you, it is its responsibility to ensure that we protect our children against porn, against this material that we wouldn't like it exposed to the children. That is why it's being put under the Department of Home Affairs. And Honorable De Freitas.
The Department of Constitutional Development, for example, has actually to do with, you know, development and possible proposals for change as far as the Constitution is concerned. It is not, at all relevant to this kind of work that is applicable to the Films and Publication Board. So I think that suggestion is really a bit out of line. Thanks.
Well, with due respect, Chair, it's not international practice for these kind of bodies to be under Home Affairs. But I still don't get the connection, because your explanation reinforces how it doesn't fit in with Home Affairs. The reason why, I can see communications would have a link. The reason why I'm mentioning possibly constitutional development is that it's not only that committee also looks at all sorts of rights and so forth enshrined in the Constitution. This is not a censorship board, like in the old apartheid days. This is an advisory board, if you like. So I'm agreeing with you, but I still don't get the connection how it would fit within Home Affairs. I would see the connection. I mean, obviously, you could debate, with regards to my suggestion of constitutional development. But I would, for example, see that perhaps the Department of Communications would be more logically aligned to this kind of stretch. So I still don't understand the connection and why. I just reading from it. And just some historical information I read is that it seems to be like a layover from the old days, where old National Party ministers had a particular interest in this kind of thing. He happened to be the Minister of Home Affairs, and so it was just lumped together without any logic. And I understand that it seems that that's possibly why it is a sort of a layover from the old days. But I still, in all my information I've read and research, I don't see the connection. And if it can be explained to me, I can understand it and see the logic. I just don't see it yet. Thanks.
Honorable Bertman?
Yeah, Chair. One would say, first of all, we are a security department. And as a result, this has to do with securing us against certain viewing of certain production that comes in
order goes out of the country. So it has to do with us as Home Affairs, because there's that particular thing that has to happen. Secondly, humans are involved here, of which their bodies, their whatever, have to be used, even though it's in a sort of a film thing, but they have to be transported and used from one area to another, within and outside the country. So that on itself says Home Affairs has got interest in ensuring that whatever that is has to be then dealt with in a manner that will also protect us as South Africans.
I think we can continue this debate until the cows come home. But the point is, Jay, that when people move across the borders, then Home Affairs is involved in that process. When goods move across the border, then Home Affairs is involved in that process. And there is no other real logical kind of department under which this might fall. And most certainly not the, because there is not even a portfolio committee for constitutional development. There is one for justice and constitutional development. But there isn't a, I think it is placed here because it has to do with the movement of goods, in this instance, films and publications, across the border, and then, making recommendations on the basis of that. In terms of its appropriateness and so on. So I think we, that remains our position at the ANC, that let's leave it where it is.
Any more views on the matter? No more. Okay. Honorable Differentors, are you not supporting the
Chair, yes, we'll support the report, except for that piece on the where it's placed, because I still don't understand the logic and the link there. So we can't. We'd like to just perhaps record our dissent on that.
So we are in agreement that we will leave it under the ambit of the Home Affairs. Okay,
so I'll just remove that one sentence, and then what are the recommendations that relates to that?
So you remove the sentence there, as well as the consideration. The consideration is just that it remains under the Home Affairs Department. That's what we are recommending. Honorable Defrators, Honorable Marcella.
Thanks, Chair. That's fine if you say that, but we'd like it recorded that we're in disagreement with that. So that can be recorded officially. Thank you.
Honorable Marcella?
Yes, Sebastian, the point in question is that the report as it stands, we can't take with it. But in the event where there's a clarity or a lack thereof on a particular area, that is a matter that needs to be recorded, that the TA is not in support of that specific area, as many honorable fighters have been raising, so that we all move on the same position.
Okay, Honorable Bosman.
Chair. If the DA can just explain for us their reasons for this constitutional thing, whilst we are not going to change anything, but it's important that we understand where they are moving from. What is their reasoning in terms of talking that this should remain, in fact they should be going to a certain committee that we don't even have? Maybe they should give us reasons. But it's for noting, so that we note these reasons, but we with our position still stands.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, we all support the existence of the Film and Communications Board. It says that the nature of the organization and its own activities relate to communication. You look at the Film and Publication Board, they monitor what is happening in the public media. And those who are best at doing that, by far, is the Department of Communication. Now, if we are saying Home Affairs is dealing with security, movement of persons, well, there's no dispute about that. But the issue that we are seeking clarity on, which Honorable De Freitas has well pointed out that probably one needs to try and expatiate as to whether or not it is proper that it remains here or where should it be placed among the many suggestions that we may have. So that is the point in question. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable De Freitas, I'm sure we have discussed this lengthy. Can we accept that we are in agreement of the SPB remaining in the department and noting the objection of the DA? Okay? Can we adopt it? We need a person to, you know, and thank you.
DPW?
DPW? Honorable Kang?
There is also a recommendation that DPW is
the second last of the recommendation. Okay, no,
the first one we adopted with amendment. Second one we adopted. May I have a mover and a second? Honorable De Freitas, Honorable Asibon.
Okay, just in terms of process, I just want to indicate that the amended reports will be submitted to the clusters, to the governmental clusters that are dealing with them, and that will go from there to the president. So I'll make sure that happens as amended. Is there anything we want to say about the Russia trip, or is that all?
No,
like,
I don't think there's anything that we want to say about the trip. Honorable De Freitas.
Thanks for your indulgence, Chair. May I just repeat that, obviously...
Thanks, Chair.
Thanks for your indulgence. May I just... I mean, obviously, it's very complicated setting up these programs. Can I just request that we, as soon as I have spoken to Eddie informally, we get dates of flights. If we could at least just be informed of that, because certainly from my side, and I guess my colleagues... need to work out our programs and our diaries. So even if it's just a rough estimate on departure times and all that jazz. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Honorable De Freitas. You know, it was a bit difficult for them to do anything else. We only met with the Russian Consul General yesterday and finalized on the trip. So I'm sure when they are ready, you'll get the information. Honorable Member, Adam, do you want to
say? No, I mean, I think they just gave us provisional dates. I mean, if you wanted a general idea, no, okay.
Until you have proper information with regard to the bookings and all that, for now we can't say anything. Eddie and Adam will distribute the information here. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. The meeting is adjourned.